You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to Real Talk number 15. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
And I'm Jordan Spires.
Wow. All right, the giggles. The giggles right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Wow. An unforeseen, small, minor technical difficulty.
A snafu. I can't actually see Manny right now. We're in separate rooms, and for some reason the cameras are not working, or at least my camera isn't working to see him. So yeah, brief bit of technical difficulties is the indicator of a good show to come, no doubt. We are joined today by none other than far and away podcast appearances leader Jordan Spires.
Hell yeah,
Jordan. Do we know how many you're up to?
Not a chance.
Oh. Yeah, goodness.
I'm sure Manny can tell you with a brief bit of research, because he's got everything on a spreadsheet. But we were saying that the last time you and I actually appeared on a podcast together was Kindergarten Cop, which is like a year ago now.
Yeah, I genuinely think that was like last summer.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of just been I skip out on the podcast, Manny puts out the bad signal, and you've answered very consistently.
Yes.
to be able to come in on a moment's notice. So I appreciate that. I appreciate that you're able to keep the show afloat in my absence. So thanks for all the appearances. You've probably made a good, I don't know, 6 or 7 appearances since that episode.
Yeah,
that's fucking crazy.
So. It's nice to see your mug again, though. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it absolutely has been. It absolutely has been. Manny, any progress on that number for me?
Yeah, I'm really sad that I didn't look into this 2 weeks ago when Jordan was on, because last time Jordan was here with Mushy was her 20th appearance.
Holy
oh,
shit.
Damn!
So this is this appears to be 21.
This is 21.
You're gonna catch me.
Damn. I still got some ways to go. I'm working on it though. One of the reasons why I pick it up so often is because I don't have many other movie people in my life, so I'm more than happy to come and talk to Manny about movies for 2 hours, because when I do it with my coworkers, they get bored.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I work with music people, so I can talk music all day.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite movie coworkers just quit, so that's kind of and not a word of a lie, I do happen to know that one of my coworkers' favorite movies is an action movie called Chinese Hercules. That is a true thing. So the taste in movies is leaving something to be desired for me. And when I say favorite, I mean like they're the kind of people who like bad movies. So shit, maybe they'd like.
I didn't know you were with
like
Rachel.
The movie we're gonna talk about later tonight.
You were with Rachel and Duncan. Wow.
Rachel and Duncan catching strays, and they're not even here.
Ouch.
And one of my other coworkers, he told me he only likes bad movies. So I think his favorite movie is The Room. Because he likes bad
movies. I respect
movies.
That. I can respect.
No.
Yes.
I should have invited them on for tonight.
Disgusting.
But that'll be later, I suppose.
All right, let's dive into Real Talk this week. As always, we have our weekly question that we posted on Spotify. And as promised, if you answer that question, I'll read your answer on air. But the person that answered this week is joining us on air. The question this last week is, what was the first movie you bought yourself? Jordan, what was your response to our weekly question?
Well, I couldn't tell you this for sure, because that was a long time ago, and I have zero recollection. I have a terrible childhood in my memory. But if I had to guess, there's a very good chance it was a Harry Potter movie.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah, that checks out.
Sam, what about you?
So I'm not exactly sure the first movie I purchased. I do know that the first time I ever owned movies, that is movies that did not belong to my family, they belonged to me, I received 2 movies for my 11th birthday, Simpsons movie and Transformers. Yeah. So I received both those for my 11th birthday. That was good. I think I'm trying to remember what the actual first one I bought was. My best guess as of right now is 2005's King Kong, directed by Peter Jackson. I think that's what it is, but I can't be 100% on that.
Okay.
I like it.
So I can't tell you what my first VHS that I bought was, but I know for a fact that the first DVD I bought was Out of Sight. I know that one of the first VHS movies I bought to own was before you could buy VHS tapes, and I had to own it. So in Kamloops, there was a video distribution company, and I went to their head office and I said, I would like to buy this movie that is being released on VHS soon. And that movie is Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, damn.
And they said, well, we don't normally sell to customers. We have clients such as Blockbuster and all that. And I said, why would it take anything more for you guys to just order in one extra copy that I will pay for you? And they were, again, this is before tapes were sold commercially. Now, that doesn't mean eventually they would come on, like the Disney vaults. Disney would release movies and then put them back in the vault and all that kind of stuff. You could definitely buy VHS, but they were not available when they were released for rental, because the rental companies such as Blockbuster didn't want people buying them because they wanted to get as much money from rentals as they could. So you could eventually buy them down the road, but I wanted this day and date. So they said, well, it won't be a problem, but it's very expensive. And I told them, I do not care what it costs. And they're like, are you sure? Because even back then, you know, when stuff eventually was released on VHS, it was about $20-$25. Normal price for a movie. For me to buy Saving Private Ryan day and date when it was released on VHS. So that's those are the
for the ultra high quality tape for the high quality image.
Do you still
get on
have
tape.
It?
No, I don't. The sad part is, Jordan, I think about all the media, and I'm talking about all media. Like, I had a subscription to Entertainment Weekly for over 10 years.
Oh shit!
And I got rid of all of those magazines. I had a subscription to Premiere Magazine for over 10 years. I had all these subscriptions to movie magazines, all of them gone. I had close to 1,000 VHS tapes, all gone. I had close to 1,500 DVDs, all gone. Because I didn't think that a dying media would actually be worth something down the road. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's stupid because I should have known that, because I have my comic books, which I knew were valuable, and I should have just said this. I hate myself for it. I hate myself for it.
Yeah, I definitely wish there were some VHSs I still had too. Especially because I remember, especially a lot of the kids' movies when they were coming out as VHS, they were in like funky colored cartons. Mm-hmm. Like, I definitely had some, like, bright orange and bright green. I couldn't tell you what movie they're attached to for the life mm-hmm. of me, but I vividly remember seeing the bright colors on VHS, man. When I had them as a kid.
Some memory of, like, me holding, like, a bright orange VHS tape, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was. That's going to drive me insane.
I'm so sorry. It's going to drive me insane, too.
I am fairly positive. Like, I still have, like, my personal VHS tapes that like some home video and stuff. And I know I kept a couple. I'm 90% sure I still do have my VHS copy of Pulp Fiction though.
Nice.
Oh man. Badass.
Yeah. That's pretty sick. Yeah.
Moving on to our next segment is our semi-recurring segment of the Letterboxd Showdown. This round, I always want to say this week, but it's never, it's like bi-weekly. It's called
this
new
Fortnite.
Thank you. It's called A New Leaf. As the Northern Hemisphere springs forward, it's about time to look towards things to come. If you're feeling like the worst person in the world, you poor thing, take a walk on the wild side and begin again in Nomadland. You could take a page from Mrs. Harris and go to Paris, or you could eat, pray, love under the Tuscan eternal sunshine at the best exotic marigold hotel. Or you could buy a zoo. Either way, whip out those silver lining playbooks and princess diaries, then come up with your 10 favorite picture shows about turning over a new leaf. For the people, and that's it. So it's about best films about fresh starts. Here we go. At number 20, we have a very controversial film amongst the PFGs. It is Silver Linings
Playbook. Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
would not be on my list at all. Controversial. No. I'm definitely, I think, the one who dislikes this the most in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I think that I am.
So this is very, like, best films about fresh starts. I'd have to really sit down and think about this. This definitely wouldn't be on my list. Go ahead.
I honestly, there's one that comes to mind that's like maybe a stretch because in my opinion, it's about like somebody who tries to start fresh and fails.
Okay.
Like slips back into old habits.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Unforgiven.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. All right. The number 19 film. I don't really like this. I can understand it, and I'm not saying that because George might get upset about me saying that I don't like it. It is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
I understand it. Ooh, I think if I was to make my list, I don't know. I mean, it is. Like, he gets to leave an abusive household and, like, learn who he is. So I understand where they're coming from. So. If I was to make a list, it would take me a long time to realize that that would be a possibility on the list.
Same. Because I'm thinking, like, to me, that doesn't come across as, like, a fresh start. It's more of, like, an origin story. Using that on the list just makes me think, like, you can use Batman. You can use anybody because it is a fresh start.
Yeah. Is Batman Begins on there?
No. what's his next one? Okay, a movie I've only heard of but have never seen. It's called Days of Heaven. It's a Terrence Malick film.
Don't know.
It's a 4.1 on Letterboxd.
All right.
The next one, a movie that I really wish I would have on my list if I had to sit down and think about it. I love seeing it on this list. A movie I love and adore, Jerry Maguire.
Oh. Okay. Sure. Somebody recognizing the error of their corrupt ways. All right.
The next movie is a movie I have not seen. I think it's a Best Picture winner from 1969, Midnight Cowboy.
Oh. Yeah,
I don't know.
I've seen that one.
Does it fit?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wicked.
Yeah, absolutely it fits.
Another movie I've only seen once and recently watched by PFG Kyle, Trainspotting.
No.
Nope.
I haven't seen it.
I've heard that is a very difficult watch.
It is, yes.
Cool.
The next film is a movie the three of us all love and adore. And I think, personally, it kind of stretches it, but I don't have a huge problem with it, and that is Barbie.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Lego movie could be on there too, I guess.
True.
The next one, I am 99% sure Jordan has seen. I have not. And I think that Sam hasn't. So we'll have to refer to Jordan's expertise. The movie is Frances Ha.
Oh,
I've actually seen Frances Ha.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it on here.
It was okay. I gave it a 3. It was reasonably good.
I want to say I gave it a 4.
Okay.
Shockingly. But...
All right, so the next film, obviously I love seeing it on this list. It kind of, again, for me, stretches it because the new leaf doesn't really start until the end. And that's The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, no, I think I like that being on there. I understand that it's not largely about his new life. Like, it only kind of takes on the new life at the end, but okay.
Don't get me wrong. Any list with Shawshank on it, I'm going to be a happy boy. And at number 11, a movie I've always liked, and it is the original Mean Girls.
Yes. Fuck yes. I love that movie. I still haven't seen the new one. I've almost kind of refused to.
I've heard it's bad.
All right. At number 10, a movie I've only seen once, and I think it fits the definition fairly well. That is Legally Blonde.
Ooh, I like that. Mm. That's a good one.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. At number 9, a movie I have not seen, and I'm pretty sure Wes has. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
That's the debut of Scorsese, or early Scorsese, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah, I think it's like his second film.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
At number 8, a movie that Sam is going to be very happy to see on this list. I have only seen once. At number 8, we have Hot Fuzz.
Oh! Okay.
Yeah, that's fun. I just thought of another one that... okay. I've been writing down a few that pop into my head, and I'll share them at the end, I guess.
Okay, sounds good. At number 7, another movie that Sam will be happy to see on this list. 100%. Along the lines of The Shawshank Redemption, where the fresh start happens at the end of the movie. And that is The Truman Show.
Ooh. Oh, sick. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next is a movie I never got around to watching in 2021. And that is The Worst Person in the World.
Yeah, I didn't actually see that either.
It's good. I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And it fits. Absolutely, it fits.
This is exactly the kind of the next here at number 5, the movie that I think is exemplary of what I think best films about fresh starts are. It is the 2020 best film, best picture nominee, Minari.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I didn't see Minari, actually.
Yeah, very good.
That was really good.
At number 4, a movie I love seeing on this list, and it is exactly what Fresh Starts is about. It is the 1993 genre-defining film, Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I guess very literally.
At number 3, a film I have not seen. And I'm going to go, I'm going to go 80% that Jordan has seen it. Sam, I'm unsure. I don't think so. Sam and I are both not the hugest fans of this filmmaker. Respect the craft, but don't enjoy it. It is Kiki's Delivery Service.
Oh, I actually haven't seen Kiki's Delivery Service yet. Right. But I will. It is on my list one day.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. At number 2, it is a movie the three of us have all enjoyed immensely. Now, while it didn't make my top 10 of that year, I'm pretty sure it made both of yours. A filmmaker that I respect but don't love as much as a lot of the people in the PFGs. The number 2 film about fresh starts is Poor Things.
Oh.
Oh, sick.
Yes, that's absolutely.
That's a really good answer. I love that.
That's a great answer.
I think that was like my number 5 or something. That's really good.
And the number 1 film about fresh starts is a movie that Sam and I both fucking worship at the altar of. I am actually unsure of Jordan's opinion on this film. I would hope that she would enjoy it.
I might know what it is.
I would be shocked if she wasn't. Sam, would you like to harbor guess at what the number 1 film is?
I think you're going to tell me it's The Town.
It is not.
Oh.
But that is not bad. The number 1 film about fresh starts is about trying your best to start as fresh as possible. It is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I like that as number 1. That works.
So do I.
That definitely works. I'm a fan.
That's a good list.
Yeah, that's good. That's a pretty solid list.
For me, a couple off the top of my head were like Pretty Woman and The Iron Giant.
Iron Giant's a good one.
Pretty Woman, she literally says multiple times, like, clean slate.
Yeah.
Yeah. those are the only ones. Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had
Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, good one.
Oh, that makes me happy.
I just love that movie and any chance to talk about it.
Would that also mean that Marcel the Shell with Shoes On would be eligible for
that? That actually was another one I was thinking about because I think that one's absolutely a fresh start too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what else do I got here? Okay. I got a few here.
Okay.
Again, one where there's a fresh start kind of at the end, so maybe it's stretching the definition, but Good Will Hunting, I think, is a good example of this.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, if
absolutely.
Truman Show and Shawshank are on there, yeah.
Yeah. I like The Invisible Man, the 2021,
ooh,
being on
good
here.
Good call. Oh. That's a great pick.
Well done, Samuel.
Yeah. And then maybe, again, kind of closer to the end, but if we're including the last several movies, I think this belongs on here too, The Holdovers.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think both of our main characters get a fresh start at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I'll also throw in Titanic.
Ooh. One of our characters very much does not get a fresh start, but yeah, one of them very much does. I'll allow that.
He does get a fresh start after he wins that poker game.
Yeah. Doesn't last that long.
Yeah, he kind of blows it if you ask me.
Doesn't matter. It's a fresh start. Doesn't matter how long the start lasts, right?
Yeah.
Fresh starts can get their fresh ends too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He lasted longer than a 100-meter dash competition.
What about this, again, might be stretching the definition, but somebody who very badly wants a fresh start and has what he thinks are many of them, but none of them really last until the end. Catch Me If You Can.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that a stretch? Okay.
I don't know if it's a stretch. I don't think I've seen it since we watched it. Okay. That was a long time ago now.
That's a long ass time ago.
Yeah.
Huh. All interesting.
Right. Okay. I like it. All right.
Good ones.
Let's get into what we've been watching. Sam, you had a couple films that you would like to discuss.
Yeah, so first one up is other than Dune 2, it was my first 2024 release that I watched. So I'm a little bit behind the pace from last year. This movie brought me up to two. It is... the movie is called Musica.
Oh,
right.
And it is about a coming-of-age love story that follows an aspiring creator with synesthesia who must come to terms with an uncertain future while navigating the pressures of love, family, and his Brazilian culture in Newark, New Jersey. So I am not familiar with Rudy Mancuso, who I'm told is something of a TikTok, like a minor TikTok celebrity. I'm not familiar with him, but he wrote, produced, directed, starred in, and composed the music for this movie. So this has his fingerprints all over it. This is very much the autobiographical story of his life. He is, there's many segments in the movie where he'll just be talking to somebody and he'll zone out and imagine the world around him musically. Actually, it reminded me of a lot better version of, Jordan, maybe you've seen this movie. I don't think Manny has. I just watched it for the first time recently. It's called August Rush.
I loved that movie when I was a child, and I refused to watch it since because I don't actually think it's a good movie.
I recently watched it for the first time, and you are correct. It is not good.
Sad. I will not be rewatching it because I have fond memories of it.
This is a better version of August Rush where he kind of sees music in the world around him. And is a little bit better about communicating it and about bringing it to life. He is very much trying to, as the plot says, balance his desire to create art with his desire to please his very strict, maybe strict is the wrong word, but his mom is very staunchly Brazilian. Mm-hmm. Like, she wants him to date a Brazilian girl. She wants him to only speak Portuguese at home. She wants him to go to business school instead of doing music. It's kind of hits a lot of the cliche markers in that regard. But you know what? This movie really charmed me. I thought that even though Rudy Mancuso is not an actor, he does a very good job maybe very good to stretch. He does a good job. I mean, he is acting his life story, so he should know how to do it. Him and Camila Mendes apparently started dating on the set of this movie. So they have like that kind of chemistry that you can only get when two people are fucking in real life. So that's one of the stronger aspects of the movie. It was honestly between a 3 or a 4 for me for the most part. Like, the gimmick of there being music kind of in the everyday world took me a little bit to fully buy into, because I didn't think all, like, there's a couple dance numbers, not all of them are like the most well choreographed or the best shot, so it took me a minute to get into that. But honestly, once we got into it, and especially with the ending, I thought the ending was really, really good. This did land at a 4 ultimately by the time we got to the end. I wonder if so neither of you have seen this,
no I would like to, but I have not.
Yeah, I think I'd recommend this to both of you. I think both of you would find something in it. I think last I checked, it's like at a 3.2 on Letterboxd or something like that, which seems about right. It got the 4 from me. I mean, it's a movie about a musician who's struggling to explain his passion to his friends and family, and where it's interfering with other aspects of his life because he's so involved in it. So it was a little bit just kind of the right movie for me right now, if you catch my drift. And yeah, like I said, the ending really wowed me, and I thought it delivered the emotional punch that I really wanted it to. So yeah, it was a 4 out of 5 for me.
Nice.
Very nice. It seems like a nice, easy... It's only 90 minutes, too, which is
90 minutes long. Yeah. It's really easily consumable. Don't go into it expecting to be, challenged. It does hit a lot of cliche beats. It's like artist disappointed, or artist struggling to find a way to tell his mom, who doesn't want him to be an artist, that he doesn't want to go to college. What he really wants to do is do music. Like, it's a lot of those cliche beats, but honestly, it's a good version of what it is, in my opinion.
Nice.
Speaking of easy 90-minute movies, I watched In and Out last night.
Yes.
1997.
Yes. Hell yes.
Which I understand is a movie that the two of you already talked about, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay. I was very happy we got to as well.
Yeah, a Midwestern teacher questions his sexuality after a former student makes a comment about him at the Academy Awards. Directed by Frank Oz, written by Paul Rudnick, starring Kevin Kline, Joan Cusack, and Tom Selleck. I love the cast. It was very exciting to see another Kevin Kline movie. He's been a little up and down. My introduction to him, Manny may recall and Jordan may recall, was Life as a House.
Oh god,
that's right.
Which was not good. And then, of course, he hit the soaring heights of Dave, which we all remember how that went.
Fuck yeah.
So I was a little bit not expecting. Like, this was my confirmation. Like, do I really like Kevin Kline or do I not? Turns out I like Kevin Kline. He's very funny. He's got, like, this Robin Williams thing going on in this movie. This came out a year after The Birdcage, and The Birdcage is referenced openly in this movie. So I think he was very much trying to, let's say, evoke Robin Williams in The Birdcage, and I really liked Kevin Kline's performance in this movie. Joan Cusack has a couple of excellent freakout scenes. There's one scene of her throwing a fucking tantrum in a wedding dress. Actually, there's a couple scenes of her throwing a tantrum in a wedding dress. That is phenomenal. I love this woman. I loved her as far back as School of Rock in 2003, and I thought her performance was excellent. Now, sexuality is a very large theme of the movie. It's like the theme of the movie, basically, is specifically a character coming out as gay or being outed as gay. Was not a thing you made movies about in 1997, so I was coming into this with excitement because I knew you both had recommended this movie, but also a healthy skepticism, let's say, because I didn't know how tastefully it was going to be handled. Ultimately, I thought it was handled pretty tastefully considering the context of the time. One thing that kind of irked me that I would have liked to have been different, and again, I'm going to try not to ask too much here because I realized this came out like 30 years ago, and it's incredibly progressive for its time. I would have liked, in the discussion of him trying, how much of this can I actually say? I'm going to try not to spoil In and Out. But there's a character is very much grappling with his sexuality and realizing there's a side of him he might not have ever even acknowledged or wrestled with, or he might not have even acknowledged. And in that discussion, there is not one instance of him asking or being asked, do I like men? Like, the movie is about him trying to figure out whether he is gay, and it's all framed in terms of, like, do I like Barbra Streisand? Like, there's not one bit where he's like, do I like men? And I kept waiting for that, and I was like, really? Like, that... And again, I realize it's probably asking a lot, because it's an incredibly progressive movie. It's from 30 years ago, and I don't hold that against, like, the movie didn't lose a point for me for that. But if this was remade today, I definitely would have included a little bit more in that. We can definitely have fun with him, like, knowing all the Barbra Streisand movies and getting into a fight because somebody says they don't like one of them. We can have fun with all of that, but, you know, ultimately, if the theme of the movie is about his sexuality, I think we should acknowledge his actual sexuality at one point, and I don't think that's a massive ask, or at least nowadays it wouldn't be. So, In-N-Out is a movie I really enjoyed. It's going to get a 4 out of 5 from me. I think it's incredibly before its time, and the two lead performances from Joan Cusack and Kevin Kline are great. I also love Tom Selleck. Tom Selleck is simultaneously slimy and underhanded, but also just kind of charming. He's a very charming man. So yeah, it was a 4 out of 5. Very enjoyable watch. I would definitely watch it again. I prefer The Birdcage. Very good.
Birdcage is arguably a better movie, but I was so excited. Well, I was excited to watch this, but I was nervous. And I think when Manny and I were talking about doing this movie, he was really nervous that it was going to be offensive and that he was going to make me sit through a potentially incredibly offensive queer film that made in 1997 for the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised with how tasteful it was done and how inoffensive it became. It plays on a lot of stereotypes that don't necessarily get played on these days, which is great. But overall, I fucking love that movie. The movie with the tape, or the scene with the tape.
Oh dude, that's
one of my favorite scenes.
The tape talking to him is fucking fantastic.
The tape calls him like, "What are you, a little? You're like, you're not a little teapot or something." Like,
yeah,
that's lit up there.
Yeah, he puts his hand on his head. Yeah. "What are you, a little teapot?"
Yeah. Spoiler alert! That's going to be up for scene of the year for 52 in review.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this movie. I had such a great time, and yeah, going into the episode, I was worried that I was going to have to defend a queer film that offended my friend. And thankfully, she enjoyed it as much as I did, and it made for a very enjoyable podcast as we just giggled and gushed over how much fun we had watching this movie. Again, I understand, you know, what you were waiting for and your concern, Sam, and I'm glad that you did preface that by saying this movie is almost 30 years old. It was ahead of its time. It was progressive back in 97. And so asking something like that, while I don't think it would have been taboo or anything like that, this movie did make a nice step forward for the queer community in regards to mainstream films. And so I think it tried to tread as lightly as it could while trying to be as respectful as it could. And from my opinion, not as I'm not a queer person, but in my opinion, I think it did a pretty adequate job of that.
Yeah, I was like genuinely impressed when that movie ended. I was like, this came out in 1997. That's fantastic.
Awesome. I fucking love it. Nice couple of movies there, Sam. I'm looking forward to to checking out Musica. It won't be for a while. I've got so much on my plate.
Yeah, a couple of solid fours for me this week. That was about all I can ask.
That's delightful. Jordan, what have you been watching?
All right. So I'm gonna start with a movie we've kind of already briefly talked about tonight. So it was it's not quite my friend's birthday, but it's almost my friend's birthday. And her and I have a bond over watching some shitty movies that are kind of cultural phenomenons in themselves. And this is a special event because The Room has been kind of doing like a little 20th anniversary tour for the last little bit. And it had a showing at the Plaza in Calgary, which is kind of like our little indie theater. And not only was it showing at the Plaza, it was showing with one of the stars, Greg Sestero, who also wrote The Disaster Artist.
No way.
Yeah. So the second I saw that, I bought her and I tickets to go see it because I watched The Room with her for the very first time, and we quote it to each other all the time now. So if for some reason you have not heard of The Room, I genuinely don't know how to describe this movie in a way that makes sense. Its plot synopsis is: in San Francisco, an amiable banker's seemingly perfect life is turned upside down. Deceitful fiancé embarks on an affair with his best friend. That is a very interesting plot synopsis. I can tell you right now that the plot takes up maybe 30 minutes of this movie. There is a good hour of this movie that does not relate to the plot, and that is okay. This was the first time that I saw it in a theater full of people, so it has the same kind of thing as Rocky Horror, where there's call-outs and props. Everybody brings spoons, because there's a stock photo in the movie of just spoons in their apartment. So every time that's on screen, you throw spoons. So it was my first time getting to do that. I love doing it with Rocky Horror, so I knew we were going to have a good time with it as well. The theater was pretty packed. They actually had to open up a second showing the night before, because it sold out pretty quickly. It was so much fun. It was an absolute blast. I got to meet Greg Sestro. He signed my disaster artist book. I have a really cool and really weird print that I got at the show as well. It's absolutely absurd. This movie is not good. But what makes this movie so much fun and so watchable is when you delve into the history of how this movie was made, you understand the lore behind it. Tommy Wiseau is a man that nobody can describe. Nobody knows where he came from. No one really knows what he, how he got his money, who he is. He directed, wrote, and produced this movie, starred in this movie. He genuinely thought when he was making it that it was going to be an Oscar Best Picture contender. He went into this movie with such wild thoughts. This movie is in no way, shape, or form an Oscar contender. There is very little plot. There is very little, the performances are overdramatic, absolutely absurd. The dialogue, the writing is basic as hell. No one is able to really, you can't do anything with a script that's that bad. And because of how bad it is a cult phenomenon. People love this movie. People quote this movie all the time. It's really funny. One of the call-outs whenever Mark comes on screen is, "Oh, hi, Mark," every time. It's so great. I honestly, it's not necessarily a movie I can recommend. If you're the type of person who can go into a movie and know it's bad and enjoy the reasons why it's bad, then this is the type of movie you would enjoy. It's not Tommy thinks it was trying to be good, but at no point in time is this actually trying to be a good movie. The effort was not put in for it to be good. It's bad. It is so much fucking fun. Depending on how you're watching this, I either give it it's either a 5 out of 5 or a 1 out of 5 for the same reason that it is so bad that it's good. Manny shaking his head.
Your audio cut out a little bit for me. What is the rating that you gave it?
It's either a 1 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5. I think it's a 5 out of 5 on Letterboxd because of the experience. In the same vein that Rocky Horror Picture Show is a 5 out of 5 on Letterboxd for me.
Yeah, I think I gave both of those movies a 3 out of 5 simply to split the difference.
I feel like, did I make you watch The Room or had you seen it before?
No, I had seen The Room a couple times before. I think I had seen it twice or three times before we watched it together. I've probably seen it a grand total of about 5 or 6 times this point in my life, which is funny because it is... if I'm rating the enjoyment of it, it probably is about a 3, because even though it's really fun to laugh at such a bad movie, and there's a lot of, it's fun to quote along with, it's fun to watch with your friends, it's fun to go, "Oh, hi, Mark," and "What a story, Mark," and just quote along with it, it's really fun, but it's so cringe-inducingly bad. It's the sex scenes in it go on and on and on. They're repetitive.
There's
a couple times. I think the same sex scene is played 3 different times in the movie, and you just have to fucking sit through it. You're just there with these characters. There's a lot that's not enjoyable about my experience watching The Room, especially because I've never done the late night experience of it. I have done
Yeah.
I've done the late night experience of Rocky Horror, I think 3 or 4 times now.
Yeah.
But I've never done the late night experience of The Room, and I'd love to. I'd love to go do it.
If Kamloops ever gets it, at like the Film Society or anything, and you have a chance to, you should definitely do it. I don't think Manny should, but I think you should.
I honestly do think Manny should, because Manny, you enjoyed your time at Rocky Horror, right?
I have fun at Rocky Horror, yeah.
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 it is a lot more fun to be, to quote the movie alongside like 150 other people, and for everybody to be throwing spoons at the front. Like, there is a lot of enjoyment, and a lot of the callouts aren't, like, I find with Rocky Horror, it takes a while to study and learn the callouts. But at The Room, they're not that sophisticated. It does not take very long to figure out what you're yelling and when.
Yeah. I'm trying to find something. Manny, out of curiosity, I know you haven't seen The Room.
Not a chance.
And I know why you haven't seen The Room. Mm-hmm. Remind me again what your aversion is to The Disaster Artist. I can't remember that exactly.
I just don't like James Franco.
That's fair. Okay. That's a reasonable response.
It's pretty rare that I've watched him in a movie and not been annoyed. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but for the most part, I can't. I just cannot stand him. And that's even before all of his personal troubles came to light. He's just someone that, when he's on screen, I just not a fan.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
I will say, not that I'm trying to convince you, I don't think you're going to watch it, nor do I think you should. I do really like the Disaster Artist. If for some reason anybody listening has seen The Room but not The Disaster Artist, or vice versa, you should really just go watch the other one for the full experience. It'd be a great little double feature.
I was about to say, that would make a great double feature.
Did we do that as a double feature, Jordan? We might have done that as a double feature at some point.
Potentially. I actually don't remember.
I feel like we did. Yeah, I don't remember either.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that we would have just watched The Room.
Yeah, I don't think I would have just watched The Room.
Without watching something like this after.
Yeah, definitely. But at any rate, The Room is great. I would love to go see a late night showing, but I don't need to rewatch it on my own anytime soon.
No. It is definitely more fun the more people that are around and the more drunk you are, really.
I will also add, by the way, Tommy Wiseau, you drew attention to the fact that he is notoriously secretive about his early life before The Room. Apparently it did come out, it was confirmed somewhat recently, he is in fact Polish. He said sometimes he's from Louisiana, he said sometimes he's from France. Apparently he has confirmed publicly that he is from Poland. Like, somebody did some investigating into it and you know, it's been confirmed.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I love that man. He he hosts a lot of midnight show or like late night showings in New York. So my friend and I are trying to plan a time where we can go down and watch it with him in presence, because I think that would be absolutely insane.
That'd be surreal.
Yeah. So yeah, that was The Room. That was an absolute blast. the next movie I want to talk about is one that I've been dying to rewatch for a very long time. Came out in 2016. It was the Best Picture winner of 2016. And it's a movie that I've been wanting to rewatch for a long time to see if it really did deserve its Best Picture winner, as it was probably one of the more dramatic Best Picture announcements in a hot minute. And it's Moonlight. Moonlight, a young African-American man grapples with his identity and sexuality while experiencing the everyday struggles of childhood, adolescence, and burgeoning adulthood. So since 2016, I've actually watched La La Land quite a few times, mainly because when it came out in 2016, I was not the biggest fan of that movie, because at the time I was trying to be a really cool, pretentious nerd about movies, and I got mad because I just thought it was Oscar bait. And I'm like,
none of us here would ever be cool pseudo intellectual pretentious nerds about movies.
Exactly. I still am, absolutely. I thought it was like the hot take to be like, no, La La Land sucks, which is silly because it doesn't suck, and Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling are amazing in it. But I think I still hold that Moonlight deserved its Best Picture. But one thing that's been interesting as I've gotten older is to see how my views on what Oscar bait is has changed, because
in its own way, Moonlight is also Oscar bait. Everybody loves a story about poor African Americans, especially if they're queer. Being able to have that many minorities in one movie definitely is done on purpose. It'll tug at everybody's heartstrings. And so thus, in its own way, it is still Oscar bait. So I was wrong as a kid. This is also Oscar bait. I still do think it's a better movie. I still also probably recognize that I have a bit of a bias being a queer human being myself. And to be quite frank, when I watched this, I wasn't quite out yet. So I think that had an effect on it as well. But I still think this is a really good movie. I don't necessarily know if I am obsessed with Mahershala Ali's Best Supporting Actor win. Because he's not in it as much as I remember him being in it. The scenes that he is in are still really good, but it's not to the effect that I think I recall it being. Him and Janelle Monáe do still have some of the best scenes with Chiron, but I think he's not the best part of the movie. The movie really does its best when it gets to focus on Chiron figuring out who he is. It's a really sad, awful movie about what it's like to be queer in a predominantly African-American poor community where it's not cool to be gay, which I mean, in that state it still isn't in a lot of places, which is super fun.
It's in Atlanta, right? Or
I think
where is Florida. It Florida. Okay,
it's Florida, which I wouldn't
in my head,
wanna...
in my head it was in Georgia, but yeah.
I wouldn't want to be gay in Florida either.
Yeah,
I just want
either way.
To be. not that Alberta's much better, to be quite frank, but you know.
Hey-o.
Yeah.
The Texas of Canada.
We really are the Texas of Canada. Every day I open the news, I'm like, oh, cool. When can I move? yeah, I think this is still a really touching movie. Really important one to still have. I think, watching this now as well, as I'm in my phase of I'm tired of watching sad gays outside of, like, you know, it'd be nice to see happy gays in movies sometimes. having just watched All of Us Strangers as well last year, there's so many sad gay movies. But it's still important. They're still really good. This one is still really good. I love all the three different people who play Chiron throughout the movie. It's still very important to me, and I still personally think that it deserved the best picture that year, and I still give it a 5 out of 5 8 years later.
Yeah, I have not seen this since. I have seen it. I haven't seen it since it came out. My biases are, I'm pretty sure, well known by everybody here. La La Land is quickly becoming one of my favorite movies. It's like a comfort movie for me. I rewatch it all the time. I think it's a phenomenally well-made movie, well-deserving of all the Oscars that it got, and even some of the ones that it didn't get. I will forever love that movie. I totally understand your love for Moonlight. I did not dislike anything about it. I think I really liked all of it. I just never felt compelled to go back and watch it because it was such a heavy movie and it was such a difficult watch. But I just remember thinking it was one of the most beautifully shot movies I had ever seen. I remember thinking it was so colorful and so interesting. And I also, it was one of the early examples for me in my film watching experience. It was one of the first movies I intentionally kind of went into blind, not really knowing a lot. So I didn't know that it was about a young man discovering that he was gay. So I went in not knowing that and kind of discovered that along with him, and it's a very fun journey in that way. But yeah, such a difficult movie. I remember at that Oscars ceremony, I think this is one of the ones that Kimmel hosted, and I remember in the monologue, one of the better jokes in the entire thing, I don't know why this has stuck with me, he's like, man, it's such a sad year for movies, like La La Land and Manchester by the Sea, they're all so sad. The only one with a happy ending is Moonlight, and it comes halfway through the movie.
Jesus Christ.
I just thought that was a super funny joke. But yeah, anyway, Moonlight was a 4 out of 5 for me. I'm sure if I rewatched it, it'd probably be about the same. I'm not sure. One of my friends who's a big movie fan, who's bisexual, called me out. I put my top 10 of 2016 list on Letterboxd, and I can't remember which Marvel movie it was that came out that year. I think it's I think, was it Winter Soldier that came out that year? Or Civil War, maybe?
It'd be Civil,
I can't remember.
It's more Civil War than Winter Soldier.
Yeah, Civil War came out that year, and my friend who's bisexual and is also on Letterboxd messaged me and was like, having Civil War above Moonlight on the list is a fucking crime against humanity. I'm like, listen, like, one is super, super fun, but yeah, I kind of laughed. Knowing him, I know he was like kind of half serious, but yeah, I thought it was funny.
I love it.
I also haven't watched Moonlight since 2016. I went to when I saw it in theaters, I was pretty blown away by what I'd seen. I am with Sam. While I think La La Land's the better picture, that doesn't mean that I think Moonlight is a bad movie at all. I just think what La La Land does is phenomenal. I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to rewatching Moonlight. I keep kind of getting close every once in a while, and then usually just I'm like, I need to focus on the podcast year or my watch list. So I'm looking forward to rewatching this. I'm with you, Jordan. The Mahershala Ali win for that, while it didn't bother me at the time, as time I don't know who he beat that year. That maybe might have been more deserving. But as time has gone by, I feel a little bit more. Was it truly worthy of that win? Okay,
I've got the category if you want it.
Sure, fire away.
Okay, so Mahershala wins for Moonlight. We have Jeff Bridges for Hell or High Water. Did not realize he got nominated for that.
I did. That would have been lovely.
Lucas Hedges, Manchester by the Sea.
I think that's the same as Mahershala. He's not in it all that much, is he, from my recollection?
I think Lucas Hedges did. I honestly remember him being more of like a co-lead in Manchester by the Sea.
Okay.
I've genuinely forgotten so much about Manchester by the Sea. I forgot who the woman, like beside Casey Affleck was in that. Mm-hmm.
Another instance of a movie that I really enjoyed but haven't gone back to watch. Dev Patel, I'm surprised to see as the best supporting actor for Lion.
For Lion, right. That's a lead performance.
Yeah,
it's a lead performance for sure. If Jeffrey Rush wins Shine for best actor,
thank you.
Dev Patel should absolutely be best actor for Lion. And then the only one that I haven't seen out of the bunch is Michael Shannon for Nocturnal Animals.
Oh, I haven't seen that either.
Yeah, me too.
I honestly don't think that's the strongest category that year.
No,
it's not.
I don't actually hate Mahershala Ali's win when I look at who he's up against.
Out of that bunch.
I would have, complete bias, I would have loved a Jeff Bridges win.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you again, Jordan. Looking at the nominees that year, the Mahershala Ali win is fine.
Yeah.
All right, what's the last one you got there, Jordan?
The last one I got, I also got a nice 2024 under my belt. It is my sixth one of the year. Four of them have been, or it was my seventh of the year. Four of them have been bad, so
ouch.
I needed a win, and so I watched the 2024 release of Monkey Man.
Oh fuck balls!
Oh shit! No spoilers. I'm going on Saturday, I think.
I will try and keep this as spoiler free as I can.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about it?
I know that Dev Patel's in it, and that's it.
Okay, I'm gonna not say as much as I was originally going to.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, don't fully gut it on my behalf, but yeah, I've been avoiding spoilers.
Take off your earphones.
You think I should? I don't know. Give me a warning if you're gonna give a spoiler.
Yeah, I probably really won't, because to be fair, it's not. The plot itself doesn't lead much to spoil. The plot itself is pretty standard, but it's what he's able to do with it that's impressive. Mm-hmm. So the plot of Monkey Man follows an anonymous young man as he unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continue to systemically victimize the poor and powerless. In my opinion, Dev Patel, and we just mentioned him, which is funny, is, I think, consistently an incredibly underrated actor.
Agreed.
He has had some phenomenal roles. When he breaks out in Slumdog Millionaire, he had a great role in The Newsroom.
Yes.
He was great in Lion. He was fantastic in The Green Knight. Yes. Like, he has some amazing roles. And in this movie, not only is he the star, he is the writer, producer, and director of this movie. This movie was originally supposed to go to streaming on Netflix until someone gave Jordan Peele a copy of it. And Jordan Peele was like, no, this needs to be seen in a movie theater, and helped get distribution rights through Universal Studios. Absolutely incredible. I didn't need to know much more about this movie to know that I wanted to see it. This movie is... it's really masterful. What Dev Patel is able to do with a fairly basic revenge plot point makes me incredibly excited for his future and for kind of some of the movies that I could see like Jordan Peele's production company putting out in this kind of vein. It's got a lot of heart. There's a lot of emotion in this movie at times, but this movie is nothing if not violent. This movie has some insane violence, some absolutely incredible action scenes, some amazing fighting choreography, and it's really cool because it's able to take a movie that you watch, that you typically watch in like an American lens, it's able to blend in some Indian culture, it's able to blend in a little bit of queer culture in it as well, and it really just has a really cool tone at the end of the day. There are even a few points when Dev Patel was making this movie that he actually injured himself. He's broken fingers and toes making this movie, among other medical things that he had happened to him. He really put his body on the line to make this incredible movie. And I think I won't say much more. If I was to describe this movie using like a marriage of two movies, it's kind of like if RRR and John Wick had a baby.
Damn, that's high praise.
You just got my attention.
Yes. It's phenomenal. I think if you have the opportunity to see it in theaters, you absolutely should. It's very much so worth it. I'm so happy that I did get to see it in theaters. I really hope that people start taking Dev Patel seriously as a as an artist in all forms, really. I would watch him star again. I would watch a movie he directs. He has really cool... and really impressive visions for what he wants out of his movies. So I highly recommend this. I gave it a 4 out of 5. It could change if I was to watch it again, but I think it's a solid 4 for me.
Damn.
Sam, did you say you're going to this soon?
I think so, yeah. My brother texted me about this yesterday and said I should go see... I think we're either going to do Saturday or Tuesday. I can't remember. Why?
You're going to go see... And no offense to this movie, because I've heard it's great, but you're going to go see this movie over Alex Garland's new film that comes out this Friday?
That is this Friday, hey? Like
yeah,
tomorrow?
Yeah, it's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing it tomorrow.
I intend to see both.
Okay.
Yeah. I do intend to see both.
Okay, just checking. Yeah. I actually didn't know. So hold on. I knew that Dev Patel was... had directed a movie that he was starring in. I didn't know the title. And it wasn't until a friend of mine went and saw this recently that I realized that this was the movie that he had done. It doesn't look like, unless it's 6-round theaters for a while, I'm just not going to have the time to see this in theaters, sadly. Because I'm definitely going to be setting time aside to go see Civil War. And I have so many 97 films I need to get done. And... need, I mean, I also want. So, time is of the essence. So, Monkey Man's going to be set to the side. I'm super excited that it's getting the reviews that it's getting, and it's getting the response that it's getting, because I, too, love Dev Patel. I didn't, obviously, like, I saw him in Slumdog Millionaire. He didn't really resonate that much with me. I'm sure if I watched it again, I'd probably more recognize his talent. What really blew up for me from Dev Patel was The Newsroom. I absolutely fucking fell in love with him on that show. And then Lion solidified everything. And The Green Knight, while was a movie that I didn't really enjoy, I can't deny what he did in it. So I'm super excited to hear that he's been doing so well with this movie and it's being so well received. There was, as always, anytime... there's rumors, or when they start casting a new James Bond, you're hoping for something new and fresh. And the rumor that Dev Patel was being considered had me over the moon excited. And
I knew that the chances of him being cast were slim to none, but the very idea that there's rumors about it gave me hope that they would try something new and fresh. And sadly, they didn't, but I'm not upset with the choice they made. But Dev Patel,
he would make such a good James Bond. Ugh. He is so hot in this movie.
I love it.
Nice.
Yeah, awesome. Any last thoughts on Monkey Man, Sam?
No, only that I am going to need to decide. I think if I can do like a Saturday and then like Tuesday next week with all the free time that I have, I would love to see both of those. Monkey Man and Civil War. I would love to see both of those.
Yeah. I do imagine theaters. Civil War will probably be in theaters longer than Monkey Man will.
Yeah.
Just because I think so it's Alex Garland and there's not a lot of good movies necessarily that come out in April and May.
There's nothing coming out in April other than I think it's another horror film. I think it's called Isabelle or something like that.
Who cares?
Probably about a stupid doll or something.
Yeah, probably. All right, so that's what Jordan's been watching. You guys have been watching some really good movies.
Yeah.
I wish.
How
I
about
could,
you, Manny?
I wish I could say the same.
Uh-oh.
So, we're going to start with a movie I had to watch. Because this week was a very important week. As April 8th was Rex Manning Day. So I had to watch Empire Records. The 1995 film, 24 Hours in the Lives of Young Employees at Empire Records, where they all grow up and become young adults thanks to each other and the manager. They all face the store, joining a chain store with strict rules. This is one of the most 90s movies you will ever see. It is anchored by an incredible soundtrack. It is littered with very familiar faces of people that eventually became quite famous, obviously with Renee Zellweger and Liv Tyler leading the way. The movie is all about not selling out, as that was a huge theme in the 90s. Don't sell out. Don't sell out. And that's what this whole movie is about. Don't sell out. And this movie is just a big nostalgia hit for me. Is it good? No. Fuck no. It's not. Is it enjoyable? It is for me. Because I grew up, well, I didn't really grow up, like I was 21 when this movie came out. But what I do enjoy about this movie is how much it just reminds me of the entire idea of the 90s, of not selling out, of how the corporations were starting to move in and take over these mom and pop shops like this. And it also reminded me of actually how fucking cool it was to work in a record store or a music store. I remember when I would go in to look at CDs, I would just see the people there, and I'd be like, you guys have the fucking coolest job. It was actually literally considered cool to work at a record shop. And I just remember thinking, like, this would be an incredible job. Personally, I would have preferred to work at a video store. And 100%, I would have worked at a video store in the 90s if I wasn't making a shit ton of money working for an oil company. Yeah, I was pumping gas and loving my fucking job. I fucking love working at a gas station. It fucking ruled. So I was working at a pretty well-paying job, doing something I love. So that being said, Empire Records, I would never recommend it to anybody that didn't grow up in the 90s, and anybody that grew up in the 90s has seen it. If you want to see what an exact replica of the 90s were, you watch Empire Records and you're like, oh, that was the 90s? Yes, it was. That was. Empire Records, 3 out of 5. The Rex Manning thing, do you guys know about that movie at all?
No.
I don't have it logged. I am confident I watched this like in the last 3 years. Like since I've lived back in Kamloops, I'm confident that I've seen this.
Okay. So Rex Manning is a character in there. He's like, he's much older. Like he's an artist on his way out, and he's coasting by on his old hits. And no spoilers, he is coming into Empire Records to do a signing. You get to meet Rex Manning, and so it's Rex Manning Day. And Liv Tyler's character decides she wants to lose her virginity to him. And he is obviously as scummy as you think he is. And if you see a picture of him, which you did when I sent the picture in the group chat, he is as scummy as he looks. And the actor who played him, never seen him before, haven't seen him since, but he fucking nailed it. He did recently, I don't know how recently, like within the last couple years, did a little commercial portraying himself as Rex Manning again, and it was fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. Had a great time. I had a great time watching Rex Manning. The movie, like I said, not good. Please do not watch it. I would be happy to recommend other movies. But I will probably continue to watch Empire Records every year going forward on Rex Manning Day because it was – it's a lot of fun for me to do so. The next movie is a film I was watching because – as you two know, I've stated it in the gist. I'm following the filmography of John McTiernan. I'm following along with another podcast I listen to called Blank Check. They are doing the career of John McTiernan. And this was a movie I remember when it came out in 1993 that I fucking hated. The reason I hated it is because the world was not ready for this kind of film. That movie is the last, or no, not the, it's just Last Action Hero. With the help of a magic ticket, a young movie fan is transported into the fictional world of his favorite action movie character. This stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, F. Murray Abraham, and everyone just calls him, I believe it is Tyrion Lannister, is Charles Dance.
Nice.
Who, of course...
Tywin.
Tywin. Tyrion, Tywin. Tywin Lannister. Yeah. He is, of course, playing a villain. Why this movie is getting such a big reclamation nowadays is this movie was about 20 years ahead of its time. This movie is so incredibly meta. It is mocking the very movie that it is itself. It is very, very entertaining to watch now as it makes fun of all the action movies of the 80s and 90s. And the best part about it is that Arnold's doing a good job of making fun of himself. Now, this is not a parody film. This isn't like the scary movies or those kind of – or like the Naked Gun. What this is it is playing up all the themes and ideas of those movies to the nth degree. And the kid who has this magic ticket who gets transported starts telling them all about – the cliches of the movie, but the people in the movie think that their world is the real world. So this is honestly similar in the kind of idea of what they did with Barbie. And it's when you watch it now, while some of the special effects don't quite hold up, watching this again really made me this is my second watch in the last 2 or 3 years. Prior to that, I haven't watched it since the 90s because I hated it so much because I didn't like that it was making fun of the movies that I enjoyed as a kid. And I was like, I didn't find it funny or anything. Watching it now, I'm like, this is brilliance. They were way too ahead of its time for people to understand, and that's why it's getting so much love now. I had a good time. It's still only just a 3, but this is the kind of 3 that I would recommend watching to see just kind of how smart they were about what they were doing back then.
Yeah. Did you happen to notice that our friend Anthony Quinn is in this?
Oh, yes, I sure did. I'm looking at the cast now.
I am
so happy you said our friend. That just made my fucking day.
What?
Yep. Fantastic. Go ahead, Sam.
I'm just looking at that year's Golden Raspberry Awards because it was nominated for a number of them. So it was nominated for Worst Picture.
93?
Losing Two? 93.
Hold on. Shining Through.
Incorrect.
Shit. Oh, Indecent Proposal.
Correct. Which is funny because that would make that a strong year for Worst Picture. Like, Indecent Proposal, we gave a 3, both of us.
Yeah.
Last Action Hero, I guess you gave a 3. And I've had it recommended to me by a number of people,
actually. What are the other ones?
Cliffhanger, which I've also had recommended.
Great movie.
I've had that recommended to me by a few people.
Great movie.
Body of Evidence.
Horrible film, should have won Worst Picture.
And Sliver.
Horrible movie, should have won Worst Picture. Hey, Jordan, give you an idea. Here's an idea. Body of Evidence is an erotic thriller starring Madonna and Willem Dafoe.
Oh.
Yep. You get to watch them have sex.
I'm okay, I think. I'm good.
Yeah. Sliver, also an erotic thriller where you get to see Sharon Stone and an ugly Baldwin brother have sex.
Is there a not ugly Baldwin brother?
I think besides what Alex Dunn, he is an ugly person, but I always thought he was a physically attractive man, at least back in the 90s. Back in the 90s.
Maybe in the 90s.
William Baldwin is the star of Sliver.
Yeah, yeah, he's horrible. Yeah. Sorry, Sam, go ahead.
No, that was basically all I had to say. I guess I will just add, I guess kind of what I already said, which is that Last Action Hero is one of those 90s cult classic movies that I feel like I should get around to eventually, where I've had many people tell me, like, oh, like, give it a chance. It's actually really good. It seems like a lot of people, like, it has a small but passionate fan base.
Yes, people are starting to realize that this movie was way more intelligent than what we thought it was back in 93. 100%. Right. 100%.
That's fair. I feel like I've probably seen bits and pieces of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen it beginning to end, but I feel like it was one of the ones that was on TV a lot when I was a kid.
Totally was. Yeah. 100% worth giving a chance. That kind of three is this movie is one I definitely recommend. Hmm. Okay, so those were the good ones.
Uh-oh.
Let's move on to
those were the good ones?
Yes, sir.
The two threes that you watched were the two good ones?
Sure were.
Oh boy.
So I don't like where this is going.
Let's go with this one. This one, heads up, is a three as well. But
okay.
Jordan would never give it a three. This was a movie I was watching for one reason and one reason only, because this is where I fell in love with a certain man. This movie is the 1997 biography and massive air quotes, Private Parts.
Oh.
The autobiographical story of Howard Stern, the radio rebel who is now also a TV personality, an author, and a movie star. This is Howard Stern's own telling of his own story. I saw this back then. I did not know who Howard Stern was. I've never listened to his radio show. I've watched a couple clips of his stuff. I'll be honest, if I probably heard his stuff in the in the 80s and early 90s, I probably would have liked him because I liked that kind of stuff. Obviously, as Jordan knows, I was a big Andrew Dice Clay fan. And so I probably would have liked it, but he just wasn't available out here, so I didn't know who he was. I can't remember what made me watch this back then, but what it did is it introduced me to this young actor who I'd never heard of before by the name of Paul Giamatti.
No. Mm-hmm.
He plays a character named Kenny, who is lovingly referred to as Pig Vomit by Howard Stern and his crew. And I was just completely blown away by what I was watching on screen. And I was very excited to rewatch this because Giamatti is a fucking genius. He is spending the entire movie yelling and being angry at Howard Stern as an executive who is there to make Stern's life hell, to either whip him into shape or to get him to quit so they don't have to pay him the money that he is owed. This movie obviously sugarcoats all of the horrible atrocities and misogynistic and racist things that Howard Stern did. So that is the kind of stuff I only learned years after this movie. So I always wondered, I'm like, why is everyone hate this Howard Stern guy so much? Because I watched that movie and I was like, well, I don't know why the fuck he didn't seem that bad of a guy. But he is. The thing is, I always do have a good time when I watch this movie. What I do love, and again, I'm fully aware that it is him telling his own story. I do love that the story he tells about him and his wife is true. It does talk about they had a little bit of a rift because he supposedly almost hooked up with this, I don't want to say movie star, she was like a B movie star. Whether he not or did it, I don't know. But in the movie itself, just looking at it from that perspective, the love that him and his wife have in this movie, I found to be very touching. Knowing who Howard Stern is now, whatever, it is what it is. But I always have a good time with that. But for me, the reason I watch this, it's 100% Giamatti. He doesn't come in until just over halfway through. But once he's in there, he's a fucking delight to watch, just what Paul Giamatti just rage for the fucking rest of the movie. I had a great time. So this is also a 3 only because of Giamatti. If he's not in this, this is a 2, probably a 1. Now we're done with the good ones.
Yeah. I just want to add about Howard Stern. Admittedly, I'm not like super familiar with his stuff. He was the kind of person that I thought I liked, or I thought I knew. I'm not as familiar with his stuff as I maybe would have. I'm not familiar enough with his stuff to give an educated opinion on the man. I will say I listened to, I don't know what compelled me to do this, but I listened to his radio podcast, or his radio broadcast from September 11th, 2001.
Oh,
and that is a surreal experience watching him experience that day live. Like, going from, you know, his regular he has some super misogynistic bit in the morning. I can't even remember what they're talking about, like Pamela Anderson's tits or something like that. And like the whole morning is just about that, and then like in the middle of this misogyny is just like, and just a brief heads up, apparently there's a fire at the World Trade Center, we'll keep posted on that, and then they just like move along, and the show's like 4 or 5 hours long. And like as the day goes along, they're like finding out live what happened. It's fucking, I listened to the whole thing 1 year and it's fucking insane.
Oh, I think I want to hear that.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to listen to. Like, I had somebody like basically tell me to watch it in the same way I just told you guys to watch it. And I was like, that does sound crazy, I'm going to listen to that. And then I listened to it, I was like, oh, this is really hard to listen to. Like, this is really fucking harrowing. Anyway, so that's a little piece of, it's watching a piece of American history live. Anyway, that's the only thing. That's my only experience with Howard Stern is that show, that specific episode of that show.
Yeah, Jordan, I know that you like Giamatti. Don't watch this.
I don't plan on it. Howard Stern has never been a human being that I'm like, wow, I want to see him do more things. Mm-hmm. So I'm good. I will sit this one out.
Yeah. I know, like, after you made that comment in the group chat, I realized, I'm like, this would only infuriate you. Not because he does more of what you don't like. It's that he doesn't do any of what you don't like.
Yeah, he sugarcoats himself real hard in this. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. All right, so I got the good movies out of the way.
Okay. Let us have it.
All right. The next movie was one that I was dreading rewatching. And dreading because I saw this in theaters in 1997. This was an installment of a franchise that I hold near and dear. And this was the beginning of the end. And hopefully, with the new one coming out this year, we can finally bring it back. This is the fourth film in the Alien franchise, Alien Resurrection.
Uh-oh.
Two centuries after her death, a powerful human-alien hybrid clone of Ellen Ripley aids a crew of space pirates in stopping the aliens from reaching Earth. This movie is fucking trash. Absolute fucking trash. I pray for everything in the world that Sigourney got a healthy fucking paycheck, because this movie is such a colossal waste of her time and her fucking talent and this fucking franchise. This was really fucking hard to sit through, and I think it's because, obviously, I had recently rewatched Alien 3 as I was doing Fincher's filmography, and it just reminded me on how much I enjoy that movie and how much I love that franchise. This movie is a fucking abomination. Their attempts to tell a new Alien story is horrible. The collection of pirates, while littered with character actors I enjoy, fail to resonate whatsoever. I could give two shits about any of them. I don't care, spoiler alert, when each and every one of them gets picked off slowly. It's just a complete fucking waste of time. I didn't think I was going to hate it this much. This was a 1.
Ouch.
And it was an easy 1. And that hurts.
I will say, good team behind it. While I have no experience really with Jean-Pierre Jeunet, the director, I did recently have a friend recommend the movie Delicatessen to me, which apparently is pretty good.
I've heard the same thing.
And written by one Joss Whedon, which is interesting. I did not realize he was connected to that many franchises.
Yeah. This is a fucking complete waste of time. Please do not watch. Please do not watch.
I don't plan on it. I actually still haven't watched. I've only seen the first two. And then that one weird one with Fassbender that I watch randomly.
Prometheus? Or
Yeah, Prometheus. That's the one. Yeah,
I watched Prometheus.
All right. And the last movie I'm going to talk about is actually one that someone else on this podcast... was silly enough to join me. I challenged her and I said, if you wanted to, you could do this. And she took,
you did, she, and I hate it because you know if you give me a challenge, I can't not do it.
She took the bait. So this is the 1997 Razzie-nominated Worst Picture film, Fire Down Below. A federal agent uncovers a lucrative toxic waste dumps in Appalachia and must deal with the locals who want to keep their gold mine secret. This was stars Steven Seagal. And spoiler alert for a few days from now when we review The Postman, the very idea that this didn't win is an atrocity to all mankind. This movie is really fucking bad. Now, I've watched three or four, maybe five Steven Seagal films. This was actually a first watch for me. And to give you an idea on how bad this is, Jordan, this is his worst one. By a fucking landslide.
I'm currently looking at his filmography, and I genuinely think the only movie I've seen that he's been in is Machete.
Okay.
Hmm.
I can tell you this. Out for Justice, Above the Law, and Marked for Death. Oh shit, and Hard to Kill. Okay, those four, they're all exactly the same.
He seems like the kind of actor who doesn't necessarily have any range.
He doesn't. The movie Under Siege is legitimately good. Legitimately good.
Okay.
He's in a movie called Executive Decision that is worth watching. He's not the star, he's a co-star. This movie was...
Kurt Russell.
Yeah. This movie is a complete fucking waste of time. An absolute waste of time. I desperately tried to find, also nominated from this film, was a song that he wrote. And I cannot find an audio clip of it.
Oh, God.
He did not perform it, but he wrote it. And I cannot find an audio clip of it. I got the beginning of the song, and then it cuts into a review of the movie. So I was robbed of his entire song. The one thing I doubt Jordan noticed this, but
Manny, I'm gonna tell you right now, I absorbed absolutely 0% of this movie.
It wasn't about that, but there are actual a few country superstars that were in this movie, but you had to have known them in the 90s. So I was stunned. I was like, who? I'm like, are country stars Steven Seagal fans? Because, like, Randy Travis is in this movie, and Marty Stewart is in this movie, and Randy Travis is, like, a country music icon. And Marty Stewart, not so much, except for his look. This movie was utter dog shit, worthy of its nomination. And we'll discuss how worthy of its nomination, how it stacks up against the other films. Just a quick check-in. Jordan, did you get all five watched? Yeah, you did.
Yeah, okay. There was one that I didn't. I think there was one or two.
You guys were watching all five Razzie noms?
Yeah, there was one or two I didn't have to rewatch because I'd already seen them.
Batman and Robin
and Anaconda, okay. I've already seen.
Perfect.
I did a double header of Speed and Speed 2, because I hadn't seen Speed in a hot minute, so I wanted to watch that before Speed 2.
That was good.
So I have, unfortunately, seen all five of them.
Excellent. I look forward to discussing it in a moment's time. So, Fire Down Below, one out of five.
It was absolutely atrocious. Again, I could not tell you anything that happened in that movie. It left my brain the second it ended.
Yeah,
that got a solid so lucky, one for my goodness. Me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to say, while I did not see this movie, my experience with Steven Seagal this week was in and out. Steven Seagal is nominated for Best Actor
at
the Oscars, right. which I audibly I cackled. Yes. And they're like, and Steven Seagal, I laughed super hard. And Emma was like, yeah. Why is that funny? And I was like, okay, let me tell you about Steven Seagal.
Do you remember the name of the movie he was nominated for?
I don't.
A Snowball's Chance.
Oh God. Terrible.
Fucking fantastic. Okay, well, that wraps up what we've been watching, and that wraps up this week's edition of Real Talk. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us. You can also give us a rating on Spotify, which we greatly appreciate. While you're on Spotify, answer our weekly question. I will read your answers on air. I promise. You can
unless
also...
your name is Mushy, and then you won't.
Yeah, fuck that bitch. you can also follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sam_Manny_movie. You can follow us on Facebook, the Samuel Manny Movie Podcast. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Letterboxd at Jordan Spires. Is that right?
J.A. Spires.
Sam Reimer and Manny42, respectively. For the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast, I'm Manny Manuel.
I'm Sam Reimer.
Go ahead, Jor.
And I'm Jordan Spires.
Wicked. That's Real Talk. Adios.